Welcome to Culinary Medicine Chats, where we talk with industry experts and learn about best practices and innovations in the field. I'm your host, Olivia Thomas. Everyone, my name is Olivia Thomas, and I am co-founder of Rewire Health, and I am here today with Julia McLaren. Hi, Julia. Welcome.
Hi, Olivia.
I would love to hear a little bit more about you and the work you're doing in culinary medicine.
Sure. And thanks so much for the opportunity to chat with you today. So I am a dietitian by training. I graduated in about 2007 here in Canada and have been working sort of in related fields and on my way to culinary medicine ever since. I work full time as a consultant for Alberta Health Services as the Wellness Kitchen Consultant. So focusing on culinary medicine and kind of my day-to-day role. I'm also doing my Master's of Health Services Research with the Cumming School of Medicine with University of Calgary, trying to really look at understanding health resource methods for culinary medicine and contributing to the growing evidence of this field. And then I'm also a new research fellow for the Teaching Kitchen Collaborative.
You are extremely busy. I don't know how you have time for anything else besides culinary medicine.
It tends to be a lot of my focus, yeah.
So for listeners who might be new to culinary medicine, how would you describe it as a practice?
Yeah, so I mean, we had the privilege of partnering recently on a paper in Nutrients, Culinary Medicine or Culinary Nutrition, defining terms for use in education and practice. So I think that's a great paper for folks to go and check out. But in terms of how it's been evolving in our space, you know, culinary medicine is really an opportunity to consider all of the different dimensions of food literacy. And in Canada, we think about those in terms of like individual dimensions of food and nutrition knowledge and food skills and self-efficacy and confidence alongside the larger ecological or societal context of people's food systems, social determinants of health and sociocultural influences, eating practices, and all those kind of come together to form the background for food decisions and dietary behaviors. So we really see culinary medicine as one of those opportunities to expand on traditional nutrition intervention that might be very food and nutrition knowledge based by starting to adjunct that food skills practice. So deliberate practice of those food skills and methods based approaches to implement that nutrition recommendation. And that's the opportunity for folks to gain that self-efficacy and confidence as they see themselves do it. So when I think of it, sort of a simple analogy that I like to always use is if you're learning to drive a car, but all you get to do is talk about driving or look at a handout about driving, you know, it might be really hard to become confident and have that self-efficacy and independence with driving until you actually get the skill of practicing it. And the first time you practice driving, you probably don't want to get in a car by yourself. You know, you want that expert who is familiar with driving and who is also able to support you and teach you in a way that's supportive to your learning so that, you know, that skill of driving becomes something that you can do confidently and independently. Other disciplines like occupational therapists or rehab medicine use this a lot where that supervised practice is built into their clinical context and the referral and the goals for the patient is all around getting to do that deliberate practice in that supportive environment so that people have the chance of sustaining these behaviors when they leave the clinic environment. And so that's sort of what we see culinary medicine doing for nutrition care.
I love that analogy. And so I guess, right, like you're providing patients nutrition recommendations and culinary medicine's help applying that to kind of real food, real context. And maybe you can talk a little bit more about how it does enhance dietetic practice, because we know dietitians are experts on nutrition and nutrition counseling. But I think this new era of culinary medicine with RDs is like an emerging field. And maybe you can tell me a little bit more about how you see that kind of moving forward.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think it's very much an interdisciplinary opportunity here, and dietitians play a role alongside their colleagues in leading the field. And so what the opportunity is from our perception is really in the clinical context, you know, when someone has that at-risk or diagnosis related to a condition that could be influenced by diet and lifestyle, the traditional medical model may or may not include a referral to dietitian for that nutrition intervention, those evidence-based dietary recommendations. And what we're saying is Probably it should. That would be really helpful if it's a lifestyle or diet-based condition. And then alongside that, you know, if we think about helping our patients to achieve these recommendations and making it feasible to apply them, we also want to be looking at these food skills and the food environment and supporting people with that practice. And then also considering, you know, what is the access to food as well? And so I really see that as a triad of intervention that dietitians can be involved with in supporting. And, you know, there's lots of different disciplines, as I said, involved in sort of all aspects of this, what's known in the US anyways as food as medicine, care or intervention. And it can look a lot of different ways in terms of that food access, you know, medically tailored meals or medically tailored groceries, for example. But I think that triad of care is really where we help patients optimize those nutrition recommendations and get the most out of their self-management and lifestyle change.
And so for the triad, you're talking about like standard nutrition counseling or M&T, and then culinary medicine, and then food assistance programs.
Or some kind of food access, even if it's just screening that and ensuring, yeah, everything's good in that department. People have the foods they need to actually implement these recommendations, and they have the skills they need to do them as well. And they know what those recommendations are.
And how do you see that rolling out in a clinical setting? Because I'm thinking of dietitians in hospitals are often in like little cubicles or like tiny little rooms. How does this happen in a clinical care setting?
Yeah, I guess it's not exactly the traditional model. So it is about all professions kind of venturing outside that kind of standard approach. But really, we know that across the board, when it comes to equity in medical care, you know, a lot of our patients are telling us that, yeah, the typical white coat syndrome or the typical way of approaching clinic is maybe not the thing that fosters that engagement and skill building the way that patients might like experiential. And so again, I'm going to allude back to the OT clinic, right? Like after someone receives that diagnosis and the OT intervention or referral is proposed, the whole idea is that the person will go and build that therapeutic rapport, but they're building it in a clinical space, quote unquote, that like doesn't involve desks or chairs or offices. It involves a therapy bed and all of the like intervention tools that the OT needs to do their intervention for the patient, whether that's, I don't know what all the different things are, the gel and the heat pads and the little, what is that, electron thingies that they do. So that's all set up there. And so is all of the gym equipment and that kind of built-in progression that we're going to go from the OT providing something that they're doing to you to now, okay, you're going to start doing that, or the physio, you're going to start doing these exercises yourselves. And don't worry, we're here to supervise you, but gradually, you know, maybe we're working on three other patients while you're doing it independently. And then you're getting your list of things to do at home. I mean, that clinical model is one that really, in my mind, resonates, where maybe we're not meeting people for the first time in those traditional kind of medicalized spaces, but maybe we are meeting them for the first time in the kitchen. And maybe, you know, the first thing is a demo and some sampling where you get to taste those foods and talk about, okay, did you enjoy that? Is that something your family would eat? Is that something you would try at home? Are these recipes useful to you? And maybe the next time, you know, you're actually cooking the foods, and then you're getting to engage on, okay, what was the experience of preparing those things? And again, do you think you have time in your work week to fit that in? What would it take in terms of grocery shopping for these things? Do you need adapted tools to cut and prepare these foods? And then getting to a level of like, okay, now we're in a series and you're going to try some of these things in between and then come back and talk about what worked, what didn't work, what would need to change, what can you do differently? And the whole time, you know, sort of looking at that methods-based approach of recipes so that people don't feel locked to, oh, I only have these three recipes for eating well with diabetes. I don't know what else to eat. They can start talking about, okay, I could substitute these things into my favorite family traditional meals, and that would help enhance my blood sugar management. But it's not in terms of like sort of the medicalized approach, it's in terms of that food-based conversation.
I love that. And I know we both work and have worked in hospitals that have built-in teaching kitchens. And so you can refer patients to a teaching kitchen to practice these skills that you're describing. And I love your analogy. I think that's a really great way to describe it. What would you say for people who may not have like that space built yet? Like there isn't a teaching kitchen on campus. There's not like a community kitchen they can use. Where would someone kind of start?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think there's so much to consider, right? We know colleagues, who are using sort of one-on-one culinary medicine intervention, where even if you can't actually practice those skills in the context of clinic, you can at least bring that dialogue in. And while you are still having a conversation-based intervention, the conversation starts to focus around those recipes, those food choices, those real food examples, and the skills that you would need. Like, do you have the confidence to do those skills? And then I know that there's lots of online supports that exist. And, you know, talking today in terms of Rewire Health, you know, that's another place that people can start to upskill these culinary skills for themselves and kind of progress along. And, you know, it could easily be adjuncted with the culinary medicine one-on-one, or even a traditional MNT appointment, where someone's talking about, okay, you know, like, what would it look like, you know, sort of, so we've got the context of what the nutrition recommendations are. Let's move into some whole food examples. And now let's start talking about and making a plan for you for implementation about how you're actually going to trial these foods over the next 3 weeks, so that it becomes less about the conceptual work that needs to be done around nutrition principles and more like the boots on the ground, you know, okay, what are you having for breakfast that will have a whole grain, have a source of protein, and have fruits or vegetables included? When are you going to prepare that food? What recipes do you need in order to prepare that? Do you have your own? Do we need to take this one and do we need to modify it together? Do you feel like you have the food skills to do that? Is toasting the oats, you know, within reach? Are you microwaving oatmeal? Or are you doing a stovetop version? Where are some flavor layering that we can get in that to make that appealing? You know, do you need a little bit of crunch of nuts on the top? Again, are you toasting those nuts? Do you have time on a day that you don't have time? Is it an overnight oats? You know, so that could be 15, 20 minutes of a quote unquote more didactic appointment. And then especially if people had a tool that they could use, like the Rewire tool, to go ahead and practice those skills through the app. And, you know, over time, they might not have to look up what the skills are or look up the full recipe every time because they have those competencies, but it allows them to do that same self-management tracking that we see in other arenas of self-monitoring, self-management, while also building those skills alongside the kind of traditional clinic appointment.
I love that. I didn't really think about it in terms of kind of transitioning counseling into really skill building conversations and maybe setting goals more around skills than, like, you know, eat 3 to 5 whole grains a week or whatever the recommendation is, but rather like, could you cook a pot of brown rice that will last you all week? I think that's a really smart way of thinking about it, of using counseling as an opportunity to talk about skills and setting goals around those skills, and then maybe referring out to other resources to help practice skills and learn if you don't have access to a kitchen kind of in your direct line of care.
And I think that's where the self-efficacy and confidence will come in, right? Because talking about it is a good first step, and it's that intention setting and that intention building, and we can map some barriers. But until people are actually practicing it, that's when the rubber hits the road. And I always used to tell my patients when I was doing active one-on-one counseling, you know, this is all theoretical until you start trying it. And I want to hear back from you, like, what you learn, because that's the gold that tells us how much my good ideas actually work in your real life. And we might find that all of my good ideas failed, and that's okay. Those are my ideas that aren't good enough. It's not your effort. So really helping people to link that conception for themselves of, like, it's time to practice the skill to see whether or not this skill is A1 that I can get confident on, that will feel more natural to me, that will become part of my routine, and is even doable. Because maybe it's not. Maybe, you know, it's not feasible to be preparing at that level, and we need some pre-prepared items, or we need to rework our whole work week and thinking about, or rework our whole perception of our week and thinking about when meal planning might actually fit in and when meal prep might fit in. And I think a lot of counselors, like, as dietitians are listening to this, I'm sure many are like, but I do that in my one-on-ones, and that is part of what I'm doing. But I think it's just the reframing for your team as well, that that's part of what you're doing, and that that is actually culinary medicine within the larger food is medicine context. And that when the whole team is involved in these types of conversations, and, you know, just not just asking, hey, did you track your blood sugars, but asking about some of these pieces, well, that's where we'll really see this leverage on behalf of the patient's long-term behavior change.
And I really like how you're kind of describing a more patient-centered care model, where you, as the culinary dietitian expert, aren't saying, okay, you have to cook these ways or use these spices, but you're saying, what are you already doing? What do you like? How can I enhance that while maybe meeting your medical needs. Do you want to give me maybe an example of something like a patient or client you've worked with in the past where you've used that like patient-centered care approach?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's really important to assume from a strength-based approach to counseling, right? But also just from the fact that like food is everywhere, people do have ingrained knowledge, even if that ingrained knowledge is a food experience from their childhood or, you know, a way that they coped before they had a family, before they had a partner, before they had dependents, but a way that they did feed themselves when they were, you know, budgets were tight and they were studying, for example, or a skill that they did to, like, I don't know, take care of a sibling, right? Like the assumption that I go in with is that there is a base level of food literacy and food knowledge, that everybody is finding ways to feed themselves. And so, you know, from if we flip the lens and think about like a harm reduction approach to counseling, right? It's like, okay, there are coping strategies in place, but we want to kind of move the needle on those coping strategies towards healthier or improved coping strategies. So I think similarly here, you know, there's a metaphor there that we can say, okay, there are food decisions and food behaviors and food skills happening. First of all, what do those look like? Which ones are serving us? And which ones can we build upon or progress to something that might relate more to this clinical outcome, right? So it's like, oh, you are listening to your hunger cues. It's just it's taking 6 hours and it's not until your workday is done and the kids are picked up and everything else is cleaned up at the house that you like are finally tuning into your hunger cues. And then it's really hard to make those healthy choices at that point. So we know that you were listening to your hunger cues. That's amazing. But can we move that up a couple of hours? And what kind of tools and reminders could we use? And is there some pre-prep that you could do? Is there a type of a food or a meal that you find really accessible and really easy or really familiar that would be comforting or that you would want to be choosing at that time? Okay, and when do we, you know, practice making that? And, you know, when would be most feasible in your week and when might be the pitfalls in your week? And would it be easier if you came to a class and we made this stuff together? You know, like, I think that's always an opportunity. But even if someone can't come to an in-person class, there's lots of virtual classes. And then, yeah, there's that virtual skill building that people can pursue. That's always a great adjunct if it's not locally available.
I think that brings me kind of to my last question. What do you see the future of culinary medicine? So I love your example of how it could be done kind of with minimal requirements and just your counseling strategy and maybe what you're referring out to. But going off of that, what would you say is the future of food as medicine?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's just so many possibilities. And I don't think a one size fits all approach is going to work. So I think across various different contexts, you know, from primary to tertiary care, and different populations and different groups needs, food as medicine application is going to look different everywhere. In terms of like my hopes and dreams and aspirations for culinary medicine, you know, I always think of it as an OR suite, you know, the same idea, right? Like in order for patients to get the service and for it to be optimally applied and to make it the most efficient, there's a whole team involved. And it is a prioritized resource and it is something that patients can access. And there's the support to be referred into it. And then there's also like prehab and post-hab. That's a whole part of it. And I think there's no reason that culinary medicine can't be that. There's no reason that most registered dietitians and most teams doing lifestyle-based care couldn't have access to teaching kitchens, whether those are virtual or built-in facilities. There's no reason that, you know, in addition to all the great self-management tools and apps that are out there, things like Rewire's skills-based apps can't be implemented into routine care. And I think, you know, it'll just take a little bit of a shift of seeing like, we know the sort of potential of lifestyle measures is relatively untested, right? And an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. You know, we hear all these adages. I do think it'll take some investment to say, okay, we're really going to, in these populations where it makes sense, where we know lifestyle intervention has efficacy, and we know that we already see that like a small investment has this big rate of return, we're going to actually test that out on a much larger scale and put the same amount of resources towards that intervention as we would to like, say, a pharmacological or a surgical intervention. And I really test that lifestyle intervention and the food as medicine approach and see what gains and dividends we can get back. Because I think in that world, we would see that patients are really being incentivized for the things that support their self-management and support them to a longer, healthier outcome.
I love that. I share your vision. I'm excited for the future of food as medicine. Thank you so much for talking to me today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me, and excited to see where the field goes.